Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. We make the turn for home toward the weekend. Playoff high school football on Friday night. And then Penn State football Saturday night. And every day is a day with the suit. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Cubs force a Game 7.
Pitch on the way. Russell drives one in the air. Deep left center. That's back near the wall. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam, Addison Russell. Cubs lead 7-0. He cracked a long drive just to the left of dead center, and it sailed into the stands. A grand slam for Addison Russell. Cubs lead 7-0.
Pat Hughes with the call on the score. WSCR in Chicago. Seventh and deciding game is tonight at Progressive Field in Cleveland. Corey Kluber, outstanding on the mound. Third start of the World Series, pitching games 1, 4, and 7. And tonight it'll be Kyle Hendricks on the mound for the Chicago Cubs. Love Game 7. Love game with stakes. This is going to be, I mean, for baseball, they couldn't have asked for a better opportunity. Great ratings, Cub factor, Game 7. I'll be locked into every pitch, and I think many of you will be too. It'll be fabulous. All right, let's talk a little hockey for a moment. Then we're going to shift to Penn State football with Frank Badani in the final half hour. The Nittany Lions take on Niagara tomorrow and Friday, dropping the puck at 7 o'clock each night. The analyst on the Penn State Sports Network is Tim King. Tim, obviously the big win over Notre Dame, a big tie against Notre Dame, highest-ranked team they've ever beaten before in the third-ranked Fighting Irish. What's the foundation in the opening month of the season that you like?
I love how much faster this team is than any Penn State team that has hit the ice before. This is about the speed that Guy Gadowski always wanted to play the game at. And that helps on the back end, too. As we saw during the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, team speed really comes into play on the defensive side of the puck as well. And it really helps that you've got a young goaltender in net who, other than 5 minutes against St. Lawrence, has not played like a freshman.
And, in fact, this was supposed to be the year that he was supposed to be brought along by him and McAdam. In other words, yeah, I'll back you up, get a few shots here and there. What has allowed him to be successful? Because, obviously, you don't go to Notre Dame and get a win in a tie unless he plays well.
Yeah, and I mean, he set up the winning goal overtime in the Saturday night game with a really slick pass. I mean, it took something for him to look up, assess the situation, and then make the perfect pass with a goaltender stick. It's way more difficult than he made it look. Peyton Jones has a real low heartbeat. And we've both been around athletes like that before in other sports where there's pressure. And you can see everybody else is feeling the pressure, but they don't feel it. They're relaxed, they're calm, they're focused, and it's contagious. You know, he's playing relaxed and calm, and he's not scrambling around the net like his head's on fire. And his defensemen start to play a little more relaxed. Then the forwards on the back check play a little bit more relaxed. And then everything starts happening. All good things that happen in hockey radiate from the goal outward. And he has been a very pleasant surprise. I was waiting for him to look like a rookie. When he did, I thought, okay, we knew that was going to happen. Check that one off the list. How fast can he get back from that place mentally, and the answer was he did it the next night.
Right. In fact, what a great story from Super Bowl 23 when the Bengals were winning over the 49ers, and Joe Montana comes out, and they need 83, 85 yards to win the game. They get in the huddle, and Montana looks over at Harris Barton. He says, "Hey, man, check that out. Is that John Candy over there?" And the Harris Barton's like, why? I mean, is this Peyton Jones, that kind of guy, that kind of heartbeat? He was like, "Hey, everything's cool, guys.
Yeah.
All good. I got it."
Yeah, he is. He is. We're two men down. Okay, you take him. You take him. I got everybody with a puck. Just do your thing. I got him. And, you know, he's a very big goaltender. He's very good with the puck. He's getting better at playing the puck, but he's already pretty good at it. And he doesn't panic. He just does not panic. And the thing that I have noticed over the last 5 years of finally getting a chance to go to tournament games and go to the Frozen Four and see what makes these teams tick, every one of those teams that I've seen lift that trophy had one goaltender who commanded the spotlight, was comfortable with the spotlight, and had that attitude about him, like, "Not today, Sparky. You're going to get nothing, and you're going to like it." And he's that guy. He is all of a sudden turned into that guy. I don't think even the coaching staff knew he was going to come this far this fast. But it's been a really eye-opening experience. I can see this kid taking this team places.
Penn State has three different power play units. Now, obviously, there's certain, you know, you can look at schemes. But how difficult are they to scout when you have three like that?
It's very difficult to scout because for the first couple of years, you had a power play where all you did was reverse the puck around the perimeter to get Casey Bailey a one-timer low in the left-wing faceoff circle. Now you have that, and Trevor Hamilton plays the Casey Bailey role coming down off the point. So now you don't have two-point, then you have kind of more of a diamond formation, which causes some teams to maybe open the box up a little bit. Guys start chasing out to the boards further, and you've got more room to get the puck cross ice down low. The other power play, Vince Petrie just likes to uncork the cannon from the right point. And everything is designed to filter back to him. A lot of times when he's on the ice now, Nikita Pavlychev is out there. So when Petrie is teeing it up in the slot, now you have this giant redwood of a forward standing in front of your goaltender, creating all sorts of mayhem in the low slot. So if there is a rebound, this kid at 6'7" can reach it if it's sitting out in the parking lot. And it's... They're two entirely different power plays, and the third one is a little more, I don't want to say generic, but it's a little more standard. So that's a little bit easier to defense, but the other two give you trouble, and lots of luck if your best penalty kill has a 5'10" defenseman trying to get Pavlychev away from your goaltender.
Right. Which has been important. Give me an idea of the job, like a veteran like Eric Audio, and the improvement he's made as time has gone.
Eric makes very few mistakes with the puck. He's not a big, flashy Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey kind of defenseman. He's very efficient at getting the puck out of the zone. His defensive partner can always trust, if I give the puck to Ariel, to Eric, he's not going to make a mistake with it, and he's not going to put me in a bad position if he gets stripped. And we've probably seen Eric put his defensive partner in a really bad spot like that maybe once a year. And this year, he's a little more heady. He understands that he's got to show a little bit of leadership on the ice. And he's a do-it-by-example guy. It's like, "Hey, guys, watch me. This is how it works up here." He again, another guy that has a very slow heartbeat, knows what he's doing, very bright on the ice. He's the kind of defenseman that hockey is kind of headed toward now, with everybody calling interference and calling everything on the ice in college hockey especially. He's the kind of defenseman that's going to become the prototype, the guy that can move the puck in a hurry smartly. You're going to play with more speed. You need more guys like Eric Audio.
Penn State has also done a good job, for the most part, of keeping their penalties down. And there have been more penalties called across the country than ever before in college hockey in the opening month. It's been almost startling how many they've called.
The Friday night game at Notre Dame, a normal college hockey game at Pagula takes 2 hours and 10 minutes to play it.
Right.
The game at Notre Dame took 2 hours and almost 40 minutes to play. And the whole first period was 4-on-4, 5-on-4, 4-on-5-on-3, 4-on-3. And they were penalties that you would not have seen last year. The big sin this year, and it's something that Guy Gadowski brought the Big Ten head of officiating in to talk to the guys at the beginning of training camp, to show them some films, to explain to them what they were looking for. The big sin this year is defensemen were always good at taking their top hand off the stick and just gently interfering with somebody. Give him a little push as he skates by you. Give him a little tug on the jersey.
Right.
Or reach down and grab his stick. When you take your top hand off the stick now as a defender, the Zebras' alarm bells are going off. They're locked on you, and the next thing you touch, you're going. We've noticed the Big Ten officials aren't quite as tight about it as the guys from Hockey East. The guys from Hockey East are calling it like a college basketball game. I mean, keep both hands on the stick. If you take your top hand off the stick, don't touch anybody. And Penn State's done a really good job with it because Guy really has used those videos and really reinforced how important it is to stay out of the penalty box, how we're not going to burn our legs down, killing penalties all night. And by and large, the team has done a really, really good job with it. There have been a couple of teams that have had some major, major flameouts this year. Notre Dame had a game against Arizona State a couple of weeks ago. They had 20 power play chances in a hockey game.
Right. Niagara, there weren't a lot of disappointing moments last year, but a 1-1 tie with Niagara last year was disappointing up there. They have not won yet this year. So this is all about Penn State. What does just Penn State have to do Thursday and Friday to take care of business?
They have to finish. The one thing that was frustrating about the game against Canisius Friday night was even with 67 shots on goal, or 65 shots on goal, they weren't finishing the play. There weren't many rebound opportunities. They weren't getting to that second and third opportunity that this team is really good at burying. And part of that, credit the Canisius defense. They played a lot better than a lot of people thought they would. But if Penn State keeps its foot down and gets 65 shots against Niagara, it's going to be a long, miserable night for every goaltender that Niagara brings south with them. They just don't have the size or the speed to compete with Penn State. They were manhandled by Ohio State last weekend. And the Nittany Lions just have to be careful about don't take the night off. Don't take this for granted. You know, I hear you and Jack talking about trap games in football. Mm-hmm. This might be the Nittany Lions' first in hockey this year, Friday night. And to that end, to kind of keep them a little bit of psychology from Guy Gadowski, maybe he started Chris Funke on Thursday night,
right?
Just to make sure that the guys are aware we got to buckle it down, and Funke will remind them of it. He's one of the most vocal goaltenders you'll ever be around. But they have to take care of business. It's about their game. It's not about the opponent. Don't look at the scoreboard. Don't look at the shot clock. Just go out and play like it's 1-0.
Thursday at 7, Friday at 7, both at Pagula. Tim, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, Steve. We'll see you soon.
Tim King, analyst for the Penn State Sports Network on hockey. Next half hour, Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. The new league TV contract, which begins next year, will include a package of 6 Friday night games. But here's the key. The Friday night games will be limited to September and October and will not include every school. Schools with huge stadiums, such as Penn State and Ohio State, will not be asked to host them. Michigan has declined to participate in Friday night games at home or on the road. Friday night slate will include 3 non-conference games and 3 conference games. Till now, the league has resisted playing weeknights except on the opening weekend of the season. They have no plans to play on Thursday nights, according to Mark Rudner. So, Penn State will not be asked to host a Friday night game. Neither will Ohio State. Now, it doesn't mean that Penn State can't play in a Friday night game or suddenly you're asked to play a Friday night game at. But the game will not be at Beaver Stadium. What are your thoughts on this? You're the fan? You like the Big Ten and having some Friday night games beginning next year? Your thoughts in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, so what do you think of this as a fan? I mean, it's obviously Ohio State and Penn State are going to be excluded from hosting games, and Michigan has already told them flat out, we're not playing Friday night no matter what. So, which I find, I mean, that's interesting.
It is. I wonder if that's an AD call or wonder how much the head coach has something to do with that.
Well, I mean, the head coach has to have some input.
Yeah.
They have to have some. I mean, look, you are sacrificing a day of prep to do this. Okay. Unless you've spread your schedule out. Now, remember we talked earlier, Minnesota, when Penn State played Minnesota, they had their schedules stretched out. Where I think they played on a Thursday night, then they played on a Saturday, then they didn't play again. I think they had a bye week earlier, something like that. They had it really spread out before they played Penn State. They hadn't played a conference game yet, and Penn State was playing its second conference game of the year. And so if you spread it out and you're sitting there and you played your opening game on a Saturday and you've got a bye week and you don't play again until Friday, all right, now it becomes to me an acceptable proposition. But if you're being asked to play Saturday and come back and play Friday, now you're going to run into what the NFL's running into. And what the NFL is running into is simply this. The quality of Thursday night football is not great. Now, you're talking about Sunday to Thursday as opposed to Saturday to Friday. But it does change how you do things. I mean, that does change something. It's not as if it doesn't. It does.
So three out of the six games, it will be Big Ten team versus Big Ten team. So
right.
Three
of them are non-conference.
So
yeah.
Wonder if you would just keep it West Division team versus West Division team to take into account travel. I mean, logistics are changing anyway, regardless. But just to cut back on the travel,
they haven't done this. I mean, I you know what? That stuff doesn't even come into play anymore. Man, I told you Penn State in basketball will be playing at Wisconsin and at Nebraska in the middle of the week, each at 9 o'clock at night, which is 8 o'clock local time. I mean, and remember, the road team has to travel Thursday. The road team has to travel Thursday. Now, let's say Kent State plays at Minnesota. Let's say that. Now, Kent State, they're thrilled to do it. They're trying to get some sort of national televised exposure. And these are not going to be BTN games. These are going to be ESPN games. And that's part of taking the Big Ten number and getting it increased to $190 million a year, up from $100 million. And it obviously is one of the concessions. It also puts these teams in prime time on a Friday night. So for Illinois, Minnesota, I mean, Purdue's installing lights in their stadium first time for the 2017 season. So, I don't know. something to think about. Something to talk about. Frank Podany next half hour. We'll talk about the Nittany Lion football team, this four-game winning streak. They look to make it five in a row when they host Iowa 7:30 Saturday night in Beaver Stadium. 6 o'clock the air time for the Dietz and Watson tailgate show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Frank Podany in just a few moments. And time now for the sports bozo of the day. It has to go to the Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver Josh Huff, who said, quote, "What pro athlete doesn't have a gun? I'm a professional athlete. What athlete doesn't have a gun? I have a wife. I have a son at home. My job is to protect them at all costs. And my job is to protect myself. And well, even though I know I have security here, I have to protect myself as well." Now, it's not the total statement. It's the part where what professional athlete doesn't have a gun? I'm sure a lot don't. Not everybody feels comfortable having one. Others do. It's the second, and he's fully within his right in the Second Amendment, without question, to have one. But don't make the general statement like which one doesn't. I think there are a bunch that don't, because everybody has their own level of comfort as to whether they want to have one or not. Like, okay. Asked if he believes everybody in the locker room and around the league carries a gun, he said, "Yeah, I do." Now, he was charged with possessing an unloaded 9mm handgun without a permit and a small number of, and also a small amount of marijuana after he was pulled over on the Walt Whitman Bridge on the Jersey side. He said he was at the Eagles NovaCare facility on Tuesday prior to the arrest, but he told the ESPN that he made a stop before heading home over the Walt Whitman to pick up his gun. He would not reveal where. Huff was asked if he ever brought the weapon into the NovaCare facility. He said, "No, I'm not Gilbert Arenas, bro. Okay. No, I'm not going to bring a gun onto the premises. I'm not going to bring a gun and put my life and my teammates in jeopardy of anything. That's not me. It's solely for protection. That's that." Which is fine. I mean, for protection, that's fine. Just make sure you've registered it and you've gone through all the proper channels and the whole thing. That's perfectly fine. But don't make the blanket statement that all professional athletes have guns, because not all professional athletes have guns. Professional athletes are a cross-section of society. Some people are cool with, no problem whatsoever. And some people are not. Just the way it is. Some people are and some people aren't. Just don't make a blanket statement like that. There's nothing wrong with him having one at all. Second Amendment right. No issue with that at all. But don't tell us that everybody does. Okay. Time now to bring in Frank Podany, York Daily Record. Frank, welcome. Great to have you with us. Watching the first 8 games of the season, especially during the 4-game winning streak, what are some of the common threads that you've seen so far that you think of as difference makers?
Oh, I think the, James Franklin talked about it yesterday, cut way down on turnover. So you don't see a lot of the bad snaps, bad exchanges. Guys are holding onto the ball after, during the run, after the catch. That stands out to me, number one.
And I just keep getting this constant refrain of guys saying, it may have taken us a while, but players are bought into the staff, bought into each other. We pick each other up. That's what they've been doing.
You watch Trace McSorley. What energy does he bring to the table that makes a difference when you watch them offensively?
He seems really very much in control and dialed in. You know, from sitting way far away watching, he seems, you know, he as best as, like, the body language is, I guess, what I'm getting at. He seems like things don't rattle him easily. He seems very much right on point, doesn't lose, you know, no highs and lows, but yet he has that extra, you know, things come the crunch time, you need it. It seems like that elevates him. And, you know, we've seen a couple other Penn State quarterbacks have that quality, but that's huge, I think, especially this early in his career.
Right. Give me the dominoes of Barkley's presence beyond him carrying the ball.
Well, number one, I think we've seen flashes of how good of a receiver he can be, which puts another added stress on defenses. And I think time comes, you know, like they did last Saturday, they'll use him more that way. And I'm sure he's a pretty good blocker from what we hear, but it's just, you always got to account for that guy, where he's at. And I think then off the field, he seems way mature for his age, at least when he deals with us. Looks like a kid that likes to have fun, but is a leader, I'm thinking, in his teammates' eyes already. He seems that loss against Pitt and Michigan didn't get him down. He came right into the interview room, said, hey, our season's still in front of us. We're going to move forward. We're not going to hang our heads. And, I mean, he's a true sophomore, so that's, to me, a big deal from that kid.
I know I've had people come up to me this week and they've talked about the two teams that line up like Iowa does, and then they come at mm-hmm. you. But I've also thought of, in this realm, what didn't Penn State have in those two games? In neither game did they have Kabinda and Bell in combination. What difference do you think they make?
Oh, I think it's just, I think their energy, people feel comfortable with them. They know that Jason and Brandon can make big plays. And it's just like they feed off each other, you know, when, I think it was with any sport. You know, you play basketball, all of a sudden you get two guys on your team that you respect. And I think it elevates your play because you feel confident in what you're doing out there more than you did before. I think they help the younger linebackers. All of a sudden Penn State goes from having, you know, we talk about how, oh, my gosh, how are they going to get through at linebacker? Now all of a sudden when those guys come back, they're kind of deep at linebacker now.
Right, and that's made a difference. And you look at what Smith's been able to do. Kabinda ends up breaking a face mask, and that's how he gets into the game. He picks a pass off.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he might be the unsung. Him and Tyler Davis, kind of the unsung heroes of the team, because you just don't hear much about him. I didn't even know who Brandon Smith was when he came into the game the first time. No idea. So, you know, he has no publicity, and look at the job he's done. I mean, like Josh Hall, I think, you know, you have a kid who's a walk-on, former walk-on, who plays, I think, above what anybody would have imagined, you know.
You obviously, in what you do, will get a lot of feedback. So, obviously, I've asked you this question before when it came mm-hmm. to, you know, what fans think in your area, and you say, oh, yeah, I get a lot of interesting responses. What kind of responses are you now getting about this football team when they do have interaction with you, whether it's on Twitter or reaction to columns?
Just people being excited all of a sudden, looking forward, not picking apart problems and looking back, I think is the biggest thing. And I think that's what the best part of a fan, you know, if you win, all of a sudden you get to look at, well, what can come next? What are my possibilities? What's great about it? That's what gets people excited. That's what fans are doing now. You know, it's fun to look at Saturday night against Iowa as a huge opportunity for us, more than it could have been a month ago. Look at what bowl game we can go to. You know, can we possibly even make the Rose Bowl or the football playoffs? I mean, just getting people energetic talking about it. It's just such a change from after Michigan, when, you know, even some of us were thinking, you know, are they going to win more?
Right. And obviously, I mean, that you do see that change. What do you think of Iowa?
Just same as always. I mean, better Iowa than probably 4 weeks ago. You know, they don't beat themselves. They play solid. They make you earn your way down the field on offense, which I think a lot of those things I just mentioned are kind of overlooked traits. You know, they don't seem like exciting things, but I think sometimes they can be harder to overcome for the opposition than you realize. But this is a different Penn State team that's be playing Iowa than the ones you've seen in the past, too. So can't forget that.
Right,
and then, more explosive Penn State offense, big play offense. So it's a different setup.
Right. Yeah, no question about that. It is a different setup for them along the way. During the course of the week, what do you look at, Frank? Do you ever look at any tape of the opponent? Do you look at any analytics of the opponent? What do you do getting ready for a game?
I do a lot of reading. Hit as many sites that cover each team, I think, is what I do. Look at what people are talking about on some of the different websites, you know, some of the message boards. It's funny, I know some of the people think they're all crazies on there, but there's a lot of intelligent people that hang out there that actually do a lot of your research work for you in a way sometimes, yeah. Pointing out, mm-hmm. You know, just different, getting as many different ideas as you can from as many different people. I mean, I focus more on Penn State during the week than I do the opponent, because I think that's what fans really want. But still, you have to have an idea of, you know, what comes at you. So, you know, talk to the sports information directors of the other schools sometimes. You get a good vibe of where a team's headed. You know, Iowa is a team, I think, that's headed on an upward trend. Mm-hmm. And that's big because they could be playing their best game maybe Saturday.
Right, exactly. Frank, appreciate the time as always. Great work as always. And my best to Shelley, okay?
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you Saturday.
You too, Frank. Thanks.
All right.
Frank Bodanna, York Daily Record. We'll wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Join the discussion about news, sports, and more by following News Radio 1070 WKOK on Facebook. You'll get breaking news updates, plus stories where you can weigh in with your opinions. Follow the news and let your voice be heard. Plus, win prizes on our Facebook-only contests. Follow us on Facebook today and join the discussion with News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Down the stretch we come. Friday night football on ESPN with the Big Ten. Again, Ohio State and Penn State will not be asked to host. And Michigan has already told them, we're not playing on Friday night no matter what you do. So that's... that's part of the new contract. And you're looking to see in this contract who has, you know, what's in here. Nobody knows what's in here, what the expectation, what's in this contract. Nobody knows what's in this contract because they haven't released what's in the contract. This Friday night thing is the one, something that came up today. So we don't know. And that's what we're all wondering about. Nobody knows what's in the darn thing. So that's what we have to wait and see. What is in this darn thing? I didn't know Friday Night Football was in there. It's three conference and three non-conference. Now, is it six a year? That's the other part that's unclear about this. Is it six a year, or is it one each year over the next 6 years? It says six games. It doesn't say if it's six games this season or six games total. That's what makes this story a bit bizarre reading.
I just kind of came away from it saying, oh, must be six games. Three September, three October.
Oh, Penn State's already told them that they don't want to play Friday night. That's right. What I thought. I thought they would do that. Penn State's already told them that.
Yeah.
So here's the story.
Well, and an angle, too, is coaches like to go out and recruit high school kids on Friday nights.
Right. Yeah, Penn State's already told them they won't host. I mean, they've already told that. Penn State's informed the Big Ten that we will not host Friday night games, football games on Friday night. And I absolutely, nor should Penn State host it on Friday night. Now, believe it or not, Michigan and Penn State both have said no, they won't host. Ohio State says they're actually willing to play on Friday nights, but within certain guidelines.
And you got a lot of big-time high school teams in Ohio for Friday night football. Interesting dilemma.
Yeah, but it's one night. This is not an every Friday night thing. You're not moving all these games to Friday night in a given state. It's a game. Okay, so you'd be involved in a game. That's not an issue to me at all. That's zero issue. I mean, we play all these high school football games on Friday night. Penn State's not playing 12 Friday nights. I mean, they're not going to be playing on any Friday nights, I don't think. But my point is that say Penn State said yes, which they're not going to hosting on a Friday night, it would be one. Now, Penn State's not going to do it. Penn State's not going to do it. But, and neither's Michigan. They both said no about hosting. Michigan has told them flat out they won't play, which I don't blame them. I mean, why should Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State, why should they be playing on a Friday night?
So chances are a Friday night game may not appear on Fox.
No, it's supposed to be on ESPN. It's not Fox.
Okay.
This is not BTN.
Okay. I was thinking it could have been either ESPN, FS1, or Fox for a Friday night game.
It looked like it was going to be it's everybody but BTN. Michigan said they won't play at all on Friday nights. Penn State said they are not going to host on Friday nights. Now, a road game would be different. Penn State might play a road game on a Friday night.
Where would they go?
Well, there's supposed to be a mix of three non-conference and three conference games. So, but see, what I don't notice here is whether this is six games total or six games each year. So if it's six games each year, there'd be one non-conference game a week because there are three non-conference games. You have nine conference games. Then there would be three in the conference. So it looks to me like it might be six per year. And let's face it, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State are three schools in the conference that don't need the exposure of Friday night. They already have, they're already major brands. So, That's different. Now, I'm getting the sense that this is six per year. In other words, each week in the non-conference season, there would be one Big Ten game. You know, not a bad Big Ten, but involving a Big Ten team. Illinois plays Bowling Green. Something like that. Ohio State said they might be willing to play a Friday night, probably on the road, but only under certain circumstances, probably if you built in a bye week before. Now, you only have so many weeks you can play. Next year, there's only one bye week built in. Now, if you have two bye weeks built in, which I think, I want to say in 2019, I think in 2019 there were two, I think. Now it becomes a little different proposition as to the ability to schedule a Friday night.
I'm just curious if it's going to be a Big Ten team versus another team from a power conference for Friday. And just how many of those will be in the mix?
No.
Maybe one out of the six per year.
Let's give you, I know Ohio State said no to this. Say it's Oklahoma, Ohio State, because Oklahoma has to go back and play Ohio State. Okay? They have to have a return game. Right? There's no way in the planet a TV network is going to look over and say, you know, we're going to put that on Friday night. They're putting it on Saturday night. And it's not going to be on cable. Not going to be on cable. All right, tomorrow on the show, Donnie Collins and our high school announcers. We hit the playoffs. And tomorrow, the beginning of a 10-part series on Mike Ferlazzo replacing the suit. What? I just want to do a fan vote. Don't you think we should do a fan vote? I think we should give the fans what they want.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.